What's up, Howard?
What it is.
That's a captivating set of first words.
What it do?
That'll get someone who hasn't listened. Sup, Howard?
North Pole Igloo.
Sound like some laid-back Asian out of California. Sup, man? Sup, dog? There's a guy. I'm a really cool man, so I watch a bunch of Magic the Gathering videos.
That you do.
Yeah, I love them. It's not even me playing it, which would be horrible enough. In terms of, like, drying up women. I watched videos of people playing the game online.
Whatever, man. How many people in the world today have watched the World Series of Poker? That's equally absurd.
That's true.
Actually, the rules are a lot simpler. I actually do think that playing Texas Hold'em is a lot easier in Magic.
There's no debate there. There's zero debate there. Are you kidding me? Poker's eternal, like chess. Magic just has rotating game, you know, cards, and people can play different decks. I mean, it's infinitely more complex.
Yeah, there's quite a large universe of cards where you have to learn what all of them do, and everybody has to keep up with the Kardashians or Joneses or whatever in terms of what the newest card is. So
poker, because the game never changes, you have to learn much more how to play the people, I think.
Yeah.
Magic is all about the game because it's ever changing. But there's a guy on a site, channelfireball.com. There's a guy named Travis Wu.
Channelfireball.com.
Channel Fireball, the
Travis
old
Travis Wu.
Yeah, Travis Wu. And this guy is just like, sup guys, it's T-Wu here. Like, it's you taken to the nth degree.
Oh man.
Hold on. I'm going to dig up a T-Wu right now for us.
So he does a show like this, except he's video podcasting, right?
Well, shows himself playing. Here, I'm going to bring this down.
Wait,
so we can...
Is it like the Harlem Globetrotters versus the Washington Generals, or is he playing other good people?
No, he just, like, plays online. Like, he's, he plays matches against other fine online players.
Okay,
like, they're ranked. Like, if you're playing Magic online, you're not a bad player. It's like a shark tank. It's not the kitchen table where it's a bunch of kids just whacking off and, like... Look at my little combo I came up with. Everyone playing on Magic Online, because the winnings are so scant, but the games are so available, they're very vicious.
Okay.
They're really, really strong players. All right, I'm going to pot down the Gray Sky Eternal, because if you abruptly cancel anything... By the way, it's Papa's Basement. I'm John Papa Giorgio. He is Howard Flood. In papasbasement.com is the show's website. Go there for all our crud. All right, so this is... There's actually two voices I hate on this site. You're going to be treated to both.
Oh, great.
In the span of, like... 10 seconds. So the first, I forget the guy's name. He's also a contributor to Channel Fireball. And he has the voice.
I can't believe that's a website name.
Oh, it's brilliant. I know.
Oh my gosh.
Those were two cards from the absolute classic beginning era of Magic the Gathering back in 93.
I will admit to having played Magic in middle school, and I remember both Channel and Fireball. So
that was the combo.
I understand that URL. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and the guy, again, I forget his voice, or I forget his name. His voice is nails down chalkboard. All right, here, I'll play it for you. I don't know why, out of all your contributors, some who have really good speaking voices, this is the guy you have doing your commercials at the beginning of every video on YouTube. Here it comes. Please, please have it. Come on, come on, come on, girl. So, okay, wait, we do have it.
Looking to transmute some unwanted cards into a booster box?
Who is
Look
this
no
unit?
Further than ChannelFireball.com's online buy list.
What?
We offer competitive prices on cards from Ancestral Recall to Zombie Master, and we send payments fast via check or PayPal. If you're not looking for cash, we offer a 30% store credit bonus.
I can't take it. As if Magic weren't quay enough, you've got this guy becoming the voice of it.
Well, to be fair, that does sound like every computer repair or, laptop seller that I've ever heard.
It's like very Geek Squad, yeah. But they have some guys that aren't just... he sounds so... He's not even beta. He's not even a beta male. What comes after that? Alpha, beta, gamma. He's a gamma male.
I think he's a tri-lambda.
I don't... Yeah. He's Lamar. We've corrected the javelin to work with his limp-wristedness. I love that segment with the Nerf javelin that goes like 400 yards.
Could they even make that movie today?
Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
None of it.
Yeah.
Like the Asian guy who just had all the gadgets, or is that Goonies? They had one in Nerds, too, right?
Was it the same? No, that's so racist of me to say.
What?
Like, is that the same guy? No, they're not even.
Who knows, man? Hollywood is not big on an Asian performer unless he's doing martial
same
arts.
Same actor, I believe, said, me, you, the same, in Do the Right Thing.
Great scene.
Head to channelfireball.com/buylist to submit your buy order. It's faster and easier than winning at the pack rally.
Excuse me. Yo. I'm in my first ever Vintage Masters.
This is Tiwoo.
Potentially only, if you've done a ton of drafts, I might not know. I might miss some cards or whatever.
Is there video on this?
Oh, yeah. This is a guy like filming himself playing Magic. I can't take it anymore. But
all right.
That's Tiwoo. That's Tiwoo. You are nowhere near as bad as Tiwoo. Although everyone who hears your voice thinks you're black on the show. They think you're like a white gangster.
Oh, okay. Okay. So they actually do think I'm a white guy trying to be black. Okay.
They definitely detect hints of blackness. But let's get to the first thing we really that was all out of our butts. That was all fresh improv. And what we really wanted to talk about on the show was Iggy Azalea and that fancy song. You brought it up. I caught you eating right before the show, and you're like, yo, do you know the Iggy Azalea's Fancy?
Yeah.
And I'm like, all too well. Why was it on your brain?
I no longer have SiriusXM just because my subscription expired. It is not due to the Opie and Anthony canceling. Though,
you did
I
not
can now...
stand with Ant, hashtag continue.
So yeah, I now that I no longer have a SiriusXM, I have to listen to FM radio, which I put up with for a while. It's been about 6 months where I've been okay with it. It's not great, but
recently...
I was about to say,
you don't need any damn Sirius to hear Iggy Azalea.
It has just fallen off the table how bad FM radio is, and that's the leader of the pack right now, of like the horrible... Like, I miss John Legend. I miss All of Me. I'm like, where is that song? I need more of that. It's gotten so bad on FM radio recently.
Oh, we can... Hold on. First, let me be a professional. Let's fire up the bell of the ball. Oh, yeah. Such a fat beat.
This is straight.
P-H-A-T.
This is off my free version of Cakewalk, basically.
First things first, on the realist. So, for those of you unaware of who the hell Murder Business, she just used that term. This is, despite what you're hearing, Iggy Azalea. The song's called Fancy, featuring Charlie XCX. So, Iggy Azalea, if you haven't seen her, she's a white girl.
From Australia.
Hair. From Australia. Those are like just British criminal stock. There's no intermingling there. So she's as yank gets. And when I heard this was featuring Charlie XCX, and then I hear the rapping, now you might look at me and you're like, John plays the race card a little fast.
Yeah.
It might be in my pocket to be thrown on the table with the quickness. I might chuck the race card like Gambit.
Right.
I'll own up to that. But I hear this and I'm like, well, Charlie XCX must be a lovable black woman who is rapping this this song. And Iggy Azalea, being the white woman, she's the one doing the hook with the I'm so fancy.
Not true, my friend. Not true.
Yeah. So my girlfriend was playing the song for me, and maybe the second go through, I'm like, who's who on this? And she's like, Iggy is the rapper. Now, again, I would like to say I have my own unique racial perspective. Sometimes I would think people of a minority don't agree with what I say. Here's one that I'd like to think they will emphatically agree with me on. Why the hell is a white girl out there pretending like this is how she sounds? Because you know... When the mic, when she's not rapping and you get her in an interview, she's going to try to sound hood too. That's what really drives.
No,
she'll
I
be
think
in
she
character.
Speaks with an Australian accent, I've heard.
Does she just like, so this is a complete affectation
it's
that
actually,
she puts on to rap.
She started rapping as a teenager. I read her wiki page. And so when she came to the U.S., maybe 16, 17, something like that, she had it in mind to, you know, be in entertainment in the United States. And so I think she got in contact with T.I. somehow and ended up training to get onto like these Dirty South record labels. So it really was a sort of training program in order to get her to be on a record label. And since she was exposed to Southern rap, that is how they developed her skill. It really is sort of like the Karate Kid, where you have like this Italian kid learning to fight a Japanese style. They really brought this Australian girl to the Dirty South, and it's just like, hey, we're going to set you up with a mentor. He's going to teach you how to hone your rapping skills.
And that is a great metaphor, or a great analogy, because how authentic would you think of it if you saw a martial arts flick where it's a white guy and he's like, yeah, nah, it's cool, man. I was trained by Asians.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't give an F. I want the son of a bitch who grew up eating out of the rice bowl doing my Karate Kick movies. Thank you very much. It's just like with Iggy, getting back to hip hop. There was a long time in my life, not like when white kids as teens get into hip hop. I thought I was much better than it then. I was a metalhead. And I was
right,
like, F everyone putting on that affectation. But around age 18, I just started listening to it among several musics I listened to. And again, call me naive, call me idealistic. I like to think of my hip hop as like black guys who grew up in the crappy environment they're rapping about. And to me, it's kind of a music of the poor, if you will.
Okay, so you also hate Drake. You dislike Drake.
I could not care less.
Okay.
Or I couldn't, I couldn't care less.
Do you affirmatively hate him, or are you just like, meh?
I don't care. I mean, like, he's making music, and I guess the music's fine. I've heard some of his stuff, and I'm just like, I am very unmoved by this.
It's just he's decidedly middle class from Canada, you know? He came into entertainment as a child actor, so.
Like, even Tupac and Biggie are kind of putting on airs, but they lived in crappy neighborhoods for the most part. I'll give them that much. Like, I don't think Tupac knew his dad, Biggie's dad, peaced out.
But isn't this the natural flow of pop music, man? Because, like, look back at Rock.
Co-opting. Are you kidding me? Yeah. You look at Rock, who, the quintessential rock musician, who is it? I think the average person would go Elvis without missing a beat. Elvis did was rip off black dudes. I mean, he did it really well.
Even
don't
a lot of
wrong.
The Beatles' number one tunes were covers of songs by black artists who grew up poor and actually wrote songs based on that experience.
Yeah.
So...
And I remember I'm trying to remember what class this was. I don't even think it was musical history, but it was just an old white dude. And we got on the subject of black music in America.
Yeah.
And he was just like, there's just no other way to say this. It just sounds better, doesn't it? And like every kid in the class was like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's more soulful, if you will.
Dude, even with, like, you look at the blues. I created a black keys station on Pandora. And one of the things that they always think you like, if you like the Black Keys, is Jimi Hendrix.
Oh.
And every time they go from a Black Keys song to Jimi Hendrix, I'm just like, it's just not fair.
The only reason
just not
to
fair.
Listen to the Black Keys is if you wanted to screw college girls in 2009. That's it.
Hey,
I have no...
Easy.
There's
easy.
No other reason to listen to them.
Brothers is an excellent album, man. Come on. Step off.
I remember that soured a relationship I had with a younger chick. She was like, what do you think of the Black Keys? And you're like, had her little hands together.
You don't like them at all?
Please answer this correctly. No, I was like, they're derivative. Who gives
they are derivative.
Crap?
But what's wrong with that?
I don't know. I guess I'm just a turd out of Opie and Anthony's ass. I'd like to think I do something a little different. I want to listen to something new. Or at least, you know, if you're derivative, let me listen to the artist that inspired you. So getting back to Iggy Azalea.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hear this.
Right.
And I'm like, why the F would the proud history of hip hop and it comes down to this? Why wouldn't I dig out my copy of like Black Star or It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back? Instead, I got this chick. why isn't she getting laughed out of the industry? When did it become okay for someone that Lily White who wasn't. Like, if you were taken into the black community, like, Blindside style, like, you were adopted at age 4,
yeah,
and that's how you really talk or whatever, that's fine. So be it. Maybe then you can be the great white hope.
I'm sort of on the same page with you. I don't mind when people do this, obviously, since you have listeners who think that I suddenly sound like I've decided to be black today. But I'm just, if I were going to pick a rap style, why Dirty South? To me, like, learning to rap Dirty South is like learning to sing Cockney. It doesn't make any sense. Like, why would you want to sound like Lily Allen if you're going to learn how to sing? No, you aim higher. Go for Adele or something. You have to actually try to sound good in the art. And that's why, like, if I were going to do rap, why wouldn't you want to sound like you came out of New York? Why not a little Brooklyn style or something? Anything besides
it's,
this.
It's just all an affectation. We could have been, like, rapping about dingoes eating your babies and crap. Like, that would have been semi-interesting to me. I'm like, well, I've never heard that. Like, talk about getting mashed on Foster's and then blowing some Abos or something like that. Like, that is interesting to me. Like, there you want to sound hard. You're like, I once fisted a koala.
I did live in Australia for a semester during college. And yeah, that there are Australian rappers. And they do just rap about their life experiences down there with a thick Australian accent. It's cool.
Talk
it's
about
cool.
Decapitating a kangaroo with a boomerang. I would, and then playing a didgeridoo. Why isn't that in the sample mix for this song?
Actually, when I was about 10 years. It was when my first job out of college. I had these friends who listened to Irish rap.
Sorry, can't hear you over the realness. cup of ace, cup of goose. So I am listening to a white girl from the effing boonies of Boonieland rap about drinking Cristal.
Well, she probably did. She was dating ASAP Rocky for a little bit, man.
Yeah, I've never heard this in rap, though. And especially, I'm so happy this is the aspect of rap you picked up on. You didn't get into, like, some sort of underground rap. Just, like, let's hear about rims. I mean, really. Get the hell off it, sister. This is all crap she's learned in the last 3 years of her life coming over to America. It drives me berserk, dude.
She did come over young enough where it's pretty much all her entire adult life. So that's one thing. She was young enough when she came over here that it's the mind is flexible enough at that age.
Okay.
I'm trying to give her the benefit of the doubt. I mean, I don't like how it sounds either, but yeah.
There's a really good... I'm not going to say I really give a crap about Simon Cowell. I always liked when he played the heel on American Idol. Like, that. Now he's on X Factor or whatever, and he's nice sometimes. I don't know what the hell he's cucking his friend, knocked right up the wife or whatever. Oh, I don't know what the hell's going on in that man's life now. But one time he was asked, like, hey, and this was, I think, when Sexy Back came out.
Oh, right.
And Usher had, I think, the album that contained Yeah off it about the same time. And someone was like, well, who do you prefer, Usher or Justin Timberlake? And without missing a beat, he's like, well, Justin Timberlake's just pretending to be black, right? So I'm going to go with the guy who's authentically black and doesn't have to pretend. His every thought doesn't have to go through a filter of like, well, I'm a white guy. How would I say this if I were really black, though? Like, JT is from the South. I mean, like, what, Tennessee or some crap like that. I remember when he beat out Johnny Cash's Hurt video, I think with Cry Me a River or something back then. And he's like, yeah, man, I remember my grandpa, y'all, raised me on Johnny Cash. He should be getting this award. I'm like, your grandpa, if he were alive, would smack the F out of your little white boy face for talking like a you-know-what. I'd leave it for the grandpa to say his thoughts on the matter. And he's up there right now like, oh, yeah, this is how I was raised, son. You didn't talk like that, you little punk ass. Get the hell out of here. I hate it, man. Gotta take everything from black people. Why is it okay to just rip their culture? I mean, you hear it and it sounds great. So you know what? Do something they don't do. Play hockey. Play speed metal. I don't know.
Speed metal is pretty fantastic, production-wise.
Oh, it's great.
You'll never hear a MIDI bass line. That's one thing. Yeah, it's really offensive when I hear a MIDI bass line. Even the RZA. I read an interview with the RZA recently bemoaning.
It sounds like Nintendo game music, and not in a good way.
No, yeah. I think the creators of Mario Brothers would have said, this is not good enough for our video game in 1988.
Those SE Mortal Kombat sounds. There you go, Wu-Tang lyric.
But now, like, the RZA was complaining about how much sampling costs these days because it's really degrading the quality of the samples available. Like, people are just creating their own beats, and they sound like that. As if, I'll tell you this, when I got my first microphone for my computer, it came with free software for programming beats, basically. It sounds like that. It sounds like someone bought a microphone for $100 off of Amazon and programmed that into their computer and then started rapping over it. So it's a terrible beat. It really is.
Hold on. I hope this is the clean version of Ha. This is what hip hop needs to be. This is what I remember. And this was sellout crap in my day. But, hold on. I have an ad to skip.
It really
Juvenile,
is.
I'll always go back to this video. If you want what scary street hip hop was. Look at Juvenile's Ha video. And it's like
Juvenile's
some,
so good.
Some NOLA projects where a white guy wandered there in 10 minutes. You would be getting raped and murdered, robbed and murdered, robbed, raped and murdered. But he's rapping surrounded by guys from this environment. That's hip hop to me. Not yeah. some white girl who grew up like playing with dingoes.
Are you watching the video or are you just playing when you play the Iggy Azalea stuff? Are you watching the video or
there? The Magnolia Housing Projects. I look at this, I've said this before, it looks like Black Hawk Down. Right. It looks like the skinnies just took down Tom Sizemore. It's the scariest damn video. I mean, it was like three little black kids right there just jumping on a mattress. That's kind of scary. Where'd they get the damn dirty mattress? Then it's a guy next to a payphone with a snake around his neck. That's not Slash with his snake in the patient's video, kind of weird, fun, scary. That's just scary.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to rob you and cut off your pinky and then feed it to the snake in front of you.
Dude, where I live in Baltimore now, so it's summer. Like, yeah. All the kids are off from school. Apparently, I haven't really run into this, but, yeah, lots of people in the neighborhood were telling me that you have kids that just buy these dirt bikes up, and then they just, in packs of, like, 20 or more.
Just race through and rob people?
No, they're just, they're not doing anything but just riding around, and they're just, like, they basically cluster together for safety. It's a weird thing. So they're just trying to do tricks without people trying to run them over, but they take over the street. So, like, you can't get around. They're, like, using the sidewalks. They're just doing tricks. And everybody just kind of slow down and be like, hey, I'm just driving my car. Oh, well.
And how disruptive is that? How annoying and disruptive. And that's the kind of thing where someone gets run over by a white guy and then there's like a riot. And it's like, why do you think you can come into the hood and run over our kids? And it's like, the street was shut down. I just wanted to get to work. What the hell?
I think the problem would be more like, there are now 20 other little kids who are pissed that you ran over their friend and you got to get out of the car because you can't just like drive away, I don't think.
That happened, I think, in Detroit. Maybe 3 months ago or some crap, like kids were running around the street and a white guy, like one bounds in the street, white guy runs him over. He gets out to check. He's like, oh my God, kid, are you okay? And like three dudes from the neighborhood just beat him like half to death. Like he's permanently effed up now.
Yeah.
Whatever. Let's not take this down Kumia Avenue. Give a State of the Black Union address. I just, Iggy Azalea is driving me nuts. And this chick is getting famous. Sounded like this, and for some reason no one has a problem with it.
Well, here's the thing about pop music that I've learned, and this is the formula that will continue forever, it seems. If you are trying to make money in music, the goal is to find artists with the types of songs that young women ages 12 to I'd say 17, you could probably push it up to 19, but women between the ages of 12 and 19, you know, preteens and teens are the most likely to, number one, pay for music, but two, they're going to affiliate paying for the music with supporting that artist. And so this is why when you're trying to make money in music, this is the number one group that you're trying to sell to. This is why Iggy Azalea is on the radio everywhere, because for the most part, other demographics don't really pay for music. They either illegally download it or they expect it for free. There's not this real desire to support artists where you're not going to go out of your way to pay for stuff on iTunes from an artist if you don't like the songs. You'll only buy the stuff you like. Whereas Iggy Azalea, her fans are downloading her whole album.
I don't know. I think my girlfriend did some YouTube rip of it. The kids today don't pay for crap.
I'm just saying nobody pays for crap today. And so there's only a small demographic of people who are willing to pay for Taylor Swift's crap. Like, why is she on the radio? It's because of radio piracy or music piracy. The only people who are selling fit that demographic of young women. They're the only loyal purchasers of music today.
It's funny you bring up Taylor Swift because she's another poser, but at least she's stealing from her own people. Like Taylor Swift, I think, was like born and raised in New York City or some junk. Am I wrong on that? Like, wasn't her
something
dad
like
a stockbroker or some crap?
I have no
and
idea.
She was just like, I love hayseed music. Get us to Nashville.
Yeah, it was just sort of like, well, that's cute, daughter. We'll get you some guitar lessons, maybe some vocals, some songwriting.
And then this girl's so crazy driven, like at 14, she's cutting demos and just sending them out. And she's like signed by, 17 or something?
To be fair, she's probably sending a headshot and the guys are like, oh, yeah, I want to meet her. I mean, that's a big issue as well. It's the record execs, one, know that they need to market it to 12 to 17-year-olds, but two, they're looking for girls that they can look at too. Because they know that like men will be willing to tolerate it more if they're able to look at it too. I mean, it's just sort of the how much are you willing to put up with it for the people who are not in that demographic?
Yeah.
And they're more likely to put up with it if, you know, they're like that classical like model type. So sorry, I don't really.
I'm now looking at pictures of Iggy Azalea.
Yeah, no, but I mean, it's just it's a crappy formula, and yet it's the only way that the mainstream music industry can still make money. It's really trying to exploit the people who are willing to pay for it. So if you think music piracy isn't a problem, just listen to FM radio, because the only thing that plays now, it's garbage because it's pretty much geared towards people who are going to pay for Lorde's crappy music. Don't get me wrong.
Lorde's
like Royals.
Crappy music? Yeah, I was going to say.
Royals is a great song, but she has two singles out since then. They're awful.
I haven't. Sorry. I'm
Tennis Court? Tennis Court's terrible.
Trying to find out or trying to figure out in my soul if I find Iggy Azalea attractive or not. I do not like her face. I'll say that much. That dome piece is not good.
What's weird is in the video for Fancy, they dress her up like Alicia Silverstone from Clueless. And so it's a bit of an homage to Clueless. It's the strangest thing because you hear the attempt to sound like Missy Elliott.
It looks like an albino tried to be one of those Robert Palmer girls.
Wow.
Like just that big, thick red whore lipstick and a ponytail. But she just looks without pigment. What's all this talk about her ass being big? It's like white girl big. It ain't big. Get the hell out of here. Oh, she's just hitting every angle, trying to stick it out. You know what a real big ass is?
Nicki Minaj.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she's a little too big. She's like livestock, but there's a happy medium here. Oh, God. She's got these big hips.
We'll agree to disagree, man.
On Iggy's ass?
No, or? Nicki Minaj's.
Oh, no. I've seen some shots where even you would be like, pardon moi, sir. Too much. Too boku. Even you would pull out your fan and go, oh. Not in a good way. I mean, because hers is completely fake. Like, if it were real, I could at least support it. She got like her ribs removed and shoved in her ass. I think she has like her liver and kidneys in there too. Hey,
speaking of real and fake, I did want to talk to you about something that we discussed previously on this show.
What's that?
We
cover so much territory, all of it culturally relevant.
I mean, speaking of real or fake, you and I had a discussion a couple months ago when True Detective was first becoming popular about...
I talked about that one nonstop.
Episode 2.
Oh, episode 2 of True Detective is when the lovely, if I remember her name, Alexandra Daddario, who had a little role in, a big role in Percy Jackson and the Olympians.
Yes.
Maybe she's like Poseidon's daughter. I don't know what the hell she was.
She plays someone's daughter in this quest.
There you go.
She's along for the quest.
And she's a one-of episode. If you're really into Always Sunny, if you remember the episode where two rich people fall for Dee and Charlie, and then it turns out like the one after Dee is pig partying her. But the girl really loves Charlie, and then she bangs him and he calls her a whore for it.
Oh.
she's the chick that loves Charlie. She's you don't realize how big her jugs are until you yeah. But you don't in that episode. Like then you go back after seeing her nude in True Detective, which to me was a revelation, and then you see her in that Always Sunny, and you're like, oh my God, they really are not bad.
I guess
the
thing that I picked up this weekend watching that episode, because I watched it with my girlfriend. And, you know, as we were
watching
it...
Mistake number one.
Well, here's the thing. I got the perspective that you were missing on this. If you really watch that scene again...
With the whole thing is this young thing strips in front of Woody Harrelson, and she knows... Here's the best part about this fictional character and made me love her even more. She knows he's got a wife and kids at home, but she's just like, I'll do you better. Like, it's such young girl logic. I love it. It's like, I'm just going to screw you way better than she does. And then you're going to fall in love with me.
Right.
And what guy wouldn't be like, well, I really want you to try. I don't know if you're going to succeed, but goddamn if I don't want you to try your hardest, sister.
Here's the thing with the way that scene was shot. If you watch it, it's very slow. The way that the sex scene goes down, you almost never see her breasts move, which leads me to believe... they are not real.
Pox on you. As the Greeks would say, pusu.
So this is why I watched it with a woman, because I wanted to get
You're absolutely wrong. Those are as real as
how
our love
can you
for
tell?
Each other.
Because the easiest test to me is
slope
watching
test.
Them move.
Slope test, no. It is slope test.
I think you're accustomed to watching people who get boob jobs that are overdone. Whereas this to me is just like skinny girl needed a bit of a upgrade in order to get Hollywood roles.
I mean, look, if they are fake, they're fake. They're perfectly done. I don't care. Am I really going to look that gift horse in the mouth?
I think like if you actually got to touch them.
I've played with fakies like a couple times in the strip club.
And?
If they're well done, they don't feel that different.
But you notice, like, it's...
Well, yeah, there's a line.
Is your brain still functioning where, like, you're like, oh, that's not real? I'm not saying that you're going to go, like, lose a chub on that or anything, but, you know, it's just like, is your brain functioning enough to be like, ah, not a real boob?
No, it doesn't seem, like, creepy and alien, like, because it's still under the skin. It isn't like John Hurt on the table after choking on a spaghetti and he's got the the burster coming through him. Right. Like, it isn't creepy and otherworldly like that. You're like, ah, so be it. Those are fake. I don't really care. And look, I'll give this much to fakes. Until the bra comes off, unless they're horribly done, they're awesome. Like, you just see the proportions involved, and you're like, oh, my dear God. Like that Eden Center, that Vietnamese mall.
Yes, yes, at Seven Corners in Northern Virginia.
Yes. And I go there for their banh mi sandwiches that smell like raw sewage because they have fermented cabbage all over them or whatever the hell. Oh, God. You leave those in a car for 5 minutes. It smells like someone dumped a chemical toilet in your trunk. But every time lately, at least one Asian girl with like really corked ones.
Man,
and I mean, you can tell because they've got no ass. You're like, oh, when they sit, their spine must hurt.
Yeah.
I don't really, unless they're like absurdly done, like to really bad proportions, I'm just like, that was not bad to look at. Now, when the shirt comes off and they took like 2 centimeters of skin or whatever, I'm not good with the metrics, 10 centimeters of skin, and they stretched it to cover like 20 centimeters of boob, that's going to look a little weird. I mean, that's like what they do when you got a burn victim, right? They put a bubble under the skin to stretch it out, and then they chop out the spare. And then just tape that over your, you know, your dark man face.
Wow.
But that's like their can permanently. So, yeah, I don't like it when it gets a little skin stretchy.
Okay.
Like, to me, that's where the wonderment dies. But I'm going to look at her. You forced me to do this. I'm going to have to look at her bare breasts on my phone right now.
I don't like it when we talk about something sexy like fake boobs and you turn it into a discussion about, like, helping burn victims have a... reconstructed face.
I don't even know if
that went from sexy to sad. Like,
I don't think people are like immediately turned on just hearing fake boobs. Like, we're okay. You just think of a glob of silicone when you. I mean, dude, those got a nice hang to them. Those really have a good hang.
And yet, you realize the best plastic surgeons in the world are LA based. You know, I mean, it's just you're gonna have such a high proportion of the best in that city, where fame is directly correlated to the quality of your breasts. So, look, I'm afraid, like...
If they can do that, like, just shut down the medical industry, the people with AIDS, I'm sorry. The people with cancer, I'm sorry. We've done what we came for.
Just, you don't see them move on camera. Movement is usually what betrays a fake breast on camera.
We should get her on the show. Get to the bottom of this. That's all I want to know now.
Well, you know what her answer is going to be? John, you're right. Howard's a moron. That's going to be her answer.
Her answer is going to be, let me place your girth between them and you can take a softness test. And 47 hours later, I'm going to go, one more trial, and then expire up
did
under.
You say hours or do you mean seconds?
No, hours. I would take a sliver of a wine cork and put it up my urethra in order to prolong that incident. I would be going out on top.
Oh, man.
Exactly. It would be like, 48 hours when they... No, Beverly Hills Cop, when they Eddie Murphy shoves the banana up the tailpipe to cause the backfire. That would be my...
There's something wrong with you.
My seminal vesicles.
Oh,
I would have a scrote like a beach ball. She'd be like, are you okay?
Keep going. I'm fine.
All right, man. Yeah, tweet her out, man. Get her on the show. That's fine.
Okay. We'll do that. Let me talk about my Sunday real fast before we wrap this one up. I my girlfriend and I, her mom was like, my brother's an actor. He's a theater actor, which I didn't know until yesterday, or maybe I didn't. I forgot. It was definitely the latter. But he was performing with the, I guess it's the Fringe Festival, or I don't think it's the Fringe Theater Troupe.
Yeah. I definitely want to get my like crummy 80s cover band in on that next year.
Do you know about it at all?
I heard it advertised on NPR. Again, because FM radio is so bad, I listen to a lot of NPR now.
It's funny. We could have done that segment. I am so on 88.5, the NPR. Like, I've gone heavy on my dial. Like, I've reprogrammed it for the first time in years because I just don't really do Sirius either anymore.
Yeah, so, I mean, but anyway, they've been advertising the Fringe Festival lately, so that's how I know about it.
Oh, I hadn't heard that, but we saw his play, and it was called, I think, The Sage of Blackwater or something like that. And it was about labor relations. It was a one-man show, but he never leaves the stage for, like, 70 minutes.
I'm like, oh, wow.
Damn, or 75. I'm like, damn, that's some memorization, son.
Yeah.
And I really, as a kid, man, did you ever feel a kinship for theater or ever want to get into that or what?
Are we really like going down the rabbit hole of my childhood? Because we went to middle school together, and I don't know if you're aware of this.
We went to elementary too.
Yeah, but in middle school, I took theater both years.
I absolutely did not know this. I took shop.
We didn't hang out in middle school.
Like a man with balls.
Because you were more of in the metal crowd.
I was into drugs by then, and you weren't.
I was in band and theater, and I was trying to decide which of those two would be my elective in high school.
You wanted to find out which you would get beaten for in high school. Which would get you swirlies.
Strangely enough, it was a choice not necessarily made for me, but I actually did want to do theater in high school up until we had tryouts 8th grade for the school play.
Uh-huh.
And I was basically given a crummy role. And so I said, I'm not going to do the play.
I like that.
So I went diva in 8th grade. And I just, but basically, I didn't really go diva. I just like was a little kid who grabbed his toys and went home.
No, you're a quitter, like me. There's a fine art.
But no, I just was like, I don't need this. Like, I'm doing better in band. So even though I like theater more, when they felt like I wasn't good for the role that I wanted, so they gave me another role. And then I was just like, well, that's
what
fine.
What was the role? Now I want to know.
No, dude, it was this terrible play where the biggest problem was I would have had to sing. It was basically a musical.
Okay, that happens in theater, from what I gather.
And so, like, my tryout went poorly because I couldn't combine acting and singing. I'd just never done it before. They actually told me my voice wasn't bad. I was surprised because I'd never really tried to sing before that. But yeah, being able to sing while acting is a different skill. So I sucked. I was terrible. So they just said, listen, we're just going to give you this, like, side role. It's only acting, but you're only in a couple scenes, because every main part had a singing part. So yeah. For me, I was like, well,
what was it?
This
bye
stinks.
Bye Birdie.
It was designed for middle
you
schoolers.
Birdie?
No, it was bad. It was like a derivative of Frankenstein, but it was
musical though.
It was so poorly written.
Oh, foul monster! You've taken her from me.
It's not an actual musical that would ever appear on Broadway. It was written for middle school kids. It was terrible.
Frankenstein the musical.
So yeah,
what was it actually called? Don't act like
I enjoyed staging though. We talked a lot about staging.
Oh no, so you're one of the fringe persons.
I enjoyed it, and I support people who have a theater company that don't actually have a site where their theater company can perform regularly. They have to like go begging other theaters for a chance to use their stage.
I was a cool kid, so I just looked from the outside at you theater. I called you the other F words. And I remember there was definitely like a caste system in that world, because you had the kids that acted and they were needy but attractive, and then you had the people that did the lights and I guess the staging, right? And they did the props, and they would, I assume, pull a rope with a sandbag on it, whatever the hell that is. And like those are the real tech geeks who would just never shut up about theater. And you're like, you're not even involved. That would be like a bunch of board ops talking radio. It's like, oh, you pieces of crap, you wannabes, you hangers on. That's like the Bat Boy talking about like watching Jeter get some milestone hit. You're like, oh, God, it's disgusting. You know who had as much to do with it as you did? The guy watching it on the damn TV in his house.
No, but I mean, when I said staging, I was actually talking about for the actors. I actually did like staging.
I don't know.
It's more the way that you face the crowd. You actually have to learn how to. You can't act. You can't basically walk around on a stage like you do in real life. You have to make sure.
You can't
that,
like turn your back to the audience.
No, but there are technical terms for it. I can't remember off the top of my head. But you basically have to
stage right and stage left.
That's
there,
part of
I'm
it.
I'm a staging master now.
No, that's. It's the idea that you have like a quarter position where you're kind of facing three quarters of the audience or two thirds of them, so that even the part of the stage where people can't necessarily see you can still hear you because you're projecting in a way that allows your voice to fully fill the amphitheater.
Are you talking out of the side of your mouth like Senor Wences? Is that the trick?
I'm just saying like if you're basically completely profile, you're screwing the audience. You're basically killing the effect of the stage. So you're basically. You talk to people as if you're all quarter turned towards each other. And it's weird when you're doing it because it's not a natural way to talk. But when you watch people on stage, it seems natural as a member of the audience because they really are performing for you. So you have to learn how to engage in conversation in a different way when you're rehearsing than you normally would otherwise, because you're ultimately doing this for the end of showing an audience what you've done. It's weird. It's a weird thing to do when you actually get into theater. It's very strange.
No, dude. My theater experiences are nil. I think one time for college, I took in like a community theater performance.
Yeah.
And I was like, just get me the hell out of here. And one time in high school, you know, we saw like that tired production of Midsummer Night's Dream where they're doing it at like 12 in the afternoon. And it's just you and a bunch of like geriatrics. Like they let an old folks home in.
Right.
And that was their event for the month. And it never really struck me, but I guess maybe I'm looking at different things in life now. Like my budding homosexuality. No, I saw this live show and it was like a smallish theater. I want to say it housed like maybe 30 or some crap.
Okay.
But it was cool seeing this live performance right in front of you. And I mean, like I felt all sophisticated and cosmopolitan because there were gays in the audience too. And I was like, oh, gays. I don't get gays in Chantilly, Virginia. All
this
that
must
much.
Be good.
Yes. All lesbians too. All older lesbians. I think one male gay, but many lesbians. And so I picked up the Capitol Fringe Festival, like the list of plays. And I'm like, man, people, do they make a living in this putting on these productions? Because it blew my mind. It really does seem fringe. Not in the sense like it's so crazy, but you're like, who goes to see this, man?
I really do have a friend in Baltimore who does four of these a year. And the way that his company works, there's basically one guy who can support himself. He's the director, and then he relies on part-time people. And so everybody else has a day job, and he just has to convince them that they should help support him, and he can organize these satisfying experiences in the evenings for people who don't like their day jobs so that they can make four productions a year. And that's kind of how it works. There's basically one guy who'll run the theater, maybe two people who are on salary, where it doesn't necessarily support all of them. Mm-hmm. It's not like enough money to truly live well, but you can afford to live in Baltimore off of, you know, like 30 G's a year. So
that's nuts.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to read some of these that stuck out. I found a couple more hits as I went through the website. They're okay. All cataloged on a capitalfringe.org. And I think there's like a couple days left of it. And shout out to Bob Hurley. He was very good in The Sage of Blackwell. I enjoyed his performance, but first we got, A Lesbian Bell Tells! ! I like the exclamation point at the end. That lesbian bell, she's really telling, Howard.
Was it a one act? I mean, can you tell if this is like a one person play? Or?
It says drama solo performance.
So that's somebody who does this. They potentially wrote it, worked very hard on how to perform it, but they probably have a day job.
Well, just, yeah, that's what I'm guessing. Speaking of day job, the man violently hits his microphone. Come, turn your head for a second. Look at this very matronly lesbian over here. It says, settle back Southern style to hear outrageous, out capitalized, because she's out. Porch stories about a Mississippi belle, her cocktail-sipping aunties, and other crazy characters. Coming out in D.C. and at family funerals are true tales only a lesbian belle can tell, written by Elizabeth McCain. And featuring Elizabeth McCain.
Yeah.
Recommended for adults only. Nothing against it. I'm sure Elizabeth McCain does a great job talking about being a Southern lesbian. But I'm like, what's the goddamn appeal of this show?
It's a labor of love, man. Like, she doesn't care. It's...
This show's a labor of love, but I don't get to put it on anywhere.
Hey, we can work on that, you know.
I've
been trying to get you to do bar shows. Like, you hate bars. I've just wanted free drinks.
You can't.
You don't pay me. All I want is free drinks. Why can't we do this at a bar sometime?
We can't. You find the bar. You find the bar, and I'll let you drink, you filthy half Scott.
This is what I'm saying. Like,
cheap and you want drinks. Shocker.
Do you know how many places? Because what time is it right now that we're doing this? Can we tell people?
I don't care. It's 2:12 p.m. Monday.
You know how many bars would let us do this just to, like, have something to do?
Find them then, you goddamn half an alcoholic, please. All I want is people to do the stuff that I don't want to do for me, and then I'll do the things I want to do. Like, what? Eileen Mitchard of Breston Show. That's how she feels. Do you want to hear more about Breston Show? Yes, you do, because that's the last 10 minutes of this show. Welcome to the Chemo Cafe, where strangers become friends, sharing an unforgettable journey of laughter and tears on the road to healing. Join these warriors on a life-affirming emotional roller coaster in the musical one reviewer called The Tumor of Humor. That's the worst thing you could ever call anything, Howard.
That's actually designed to appeal to a certain subculture of people who...
Yeah, like lesbians with breast cancer who are trying to make light of it or something like that.
Nah, it's just... There's like that whole subculture of people who are like, we have to cure breast cancer. So they have the Susan B. whatever.
Susan
Komen.
B. Komen.
Yeah, like
that
those
apparently
bots.
Pockets like all of its money.
Only half. But no, like... Anybody who does that, it's a massive group of people. So that's really capitalizing on that market. And I will call it a market.
Like, all right. I like this one. This is the one that made me laugh. Feisty Old Jew.
Feisty Old Jew has a great picture.
Presented by Charlie Varon. Yeah, it's just this guy that looks like Shel Silverstein with a parasol behind him. Actually, if you remember Sharon Lois and Bram's elephant show, it looks like Bram, if I recall correctly. Bernie is 83. He hates yoga studios, $6 coffee, young tech millionaires, and what they're doing to San Francisco, which apparently is some domain for the old Jew. But a chance encounter lands Bernie in a Tesla with 320-somethings and an opportunity to get even. What is an 83-year-old Jew do in a Tesla? All he's going to do is eat some horrible whitefish salad beforehand and then carpet bomb the entire ride down the one or whatever the hell. I love it, though. Any play called Feisty Old Jew. Giant Box of Porn, presented by the Field Trip Theater. It's a contemporary comedy, Howard, so prepare to laugh. Young couple Ron and Kate return home to find a giant box of porn in their living room, living up to the promise of the title so far. This comedy explores life's most important questions. What kind of burglar breaks in and leaves porn? Is it okay to buy baby paraphernalia just because it's on sale? And most importantly, who still has a VHS player?
Interesting.
Why is this allowed to happen, man?
I don't know, man. Look.
I look at this like the shooting down of that Malaysian airline.
I don't understand how you can criticize people for like working an entire year. Basically, you do this show twice a week for an hour, right?
Yeah.
All right. These folks maybe perform once a year, and, you know, for 2 hours a week, they're writing this. So I don't see the difference in them having, like, their fun in their sandbox. And
well, I guess I'm just, like, laughing at the premises, but really, more than anything, I'm like, this was designed to make some sort of ticket sales. I guess what? Can you just make them?
No,
are they making a living on, like, 30 ticket sales a week or whatever? Because if so, I want in.
I think the overwhelming majority
there's
of what
jealousy
you're describing.
Here. There's jealousy here, Howard. They're making this niche crap and getting tickets.
No,
sold.
I think you're looking at this wrong. Everything you described to me sounds like someone who has a day job, who's written something and basically worked on this one side project for the past year, at least, if not longer. And this is their kind of culmination because they're able to get it into festivals. So whatever festival they can get this kind of thing into, they're going because they put a lot of work into it when they're not working. And the reality is they don't make money. This is for fun.
What? So this is like the theater version of my show. Except
it really
gets
is.
Some sort of exposure. Find those damn bars, damn you. I'm not joking. Find morning time bars for savage alcoholics that open at 11 a.m. Some lawyer who's got the DTs sitting next to us. That's what I want. Oh, God. How suggestive a photo is that? Love song to Miss Kitty. And it's just a topless cowboy with his erect nipples, and there's a pistol to his mouth with smoke pouring out. Looks like something that would come out of John the Wad's proboscis.
This must have been written from Canada or something like that.
A strapping villain tries to steal a gay country western bar from an old lesbian couple, one of whom is losing her memory so he can turn it into a dance boutique. I didn't make that up. Martin loves sex and rhythm. It's just three guys pressed against each other with the gay rainbow flag. All right, I'm gonna bail on that since you've made me feel bad.
Why? Why do you feel bad, chuckle. Man?
Well, I'm okay. Look, the one half of me, the little snarky high school kid that laughed at that crap,
right,
wants to really laugh at that crap now,
right?
But the other half of me, I'm like, they're getting an audience. They got some money. That's awesome. They're getting some money.
Define audience.
Two people. Well, no, that's my audience. 20 people. 20 people times four. I think they all have like four performances.
I can't tell you how disappointing it would be to like have something like that and then be expected to get yourself up for 20 people. I mean, you could have... I'm sure they had shows this weekend where eight people showed up in the audience. And it's like,
wouldn't shock me.
I got to perform as if this place was full. That's very difficult. There's not a lot of people who are excited about, like, nobody wanted to see my play today. And now I got to do it anyway because a handful of people bought their ticket. And the reality is, I don't think you have to understand, I don't think they got paid very much to participate in the festival. I don't think it's like a great payout because it's hard to get people to even buy tickets.
No, it's something. Like, I'm happy as a pig in S right now. Some guy hit me up on email, and he's like, you want to write a column for my site, and it's paid. I'm like, I don't even remember last time I got any sort of pay for writing. So I'm like, he's doing two columns a month with me for 30 a clip. I'm like, I don't need $60, but I just want to say I got paid writing. So
this is the same thing that these folks are doing on the Capital French Fest. They get to now put on their resume they did this, because what they're getting paid probably isn't worth the effort.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I just look at it, and I'm like, how, at least what I'm doing, I'm trying to get it noticed somehow. Maybe that's the big difference. I'm like, God damn, someone, this is marketable. Just get some advertising into it. This, I'm like, could that ever get noticed? Like, Miss Kitty's S-Box or whatever the hell the gay play was.
The real problem today is that live theater is dying. And so the reality is for all those folks, if they really want that to make it as far as... you know, getting them an audience in the real world, they got to figure out how to film it and put it online. And that's filmmaking. That's not theater. Yeah. And I don't know if any of them have really thought that far ahead. So a lot of them probably are just committed to theater because they're junkies on that. And the reality is once you start going down that different path of making movies, that's very different. That's very different. So.
All right. Well, we can punch out.
All right, man.
We did our thing. I don't have the outro music today. It'll just be this. Especially, this is the MP3 we're giving Miriam to put in for the automation tonight if you're listening on a fcac.org/WEBR at 11 p.m. Eastern in the Fairfax area. It's just going to end with us going like, good boy. You got anything to add? Oh, we should do the actual, plug our stuff. I'm John Papagiorgio at Papa's Basement on Twitter, where if you want to find all the show information and my writing information, everything's mentioned there. I try to do witty stuff, too, but I don't really care because Twitter is as worthwhile as doing these shows in terms of getting you famous. InPapasBasement.com/iTunes if you want to subscribe to the show. We do two a week on iTunes, InPapasBasement.com/Stitcher. If you like the show and you want to help out, at least subscribe. You don't really have to download. Just subscribe and give us good ratings. Tell your friends about all those links, all that crap. Howard Flood over here. At what the F in Heezy on Twitter. You can get all of that. It's what the letter F in Heezy. All right. Howard, you got another one we can go out on?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I meant another burp.
Oh, no, sorry. I was just going to say, like, for the bar owners who happen to listen to this show, holler at your boy. We would definitely enjoy being able to come in, do a show at your facility for a bar tab to be named later.
Yeah, and the show is also open for business. If you want mentions at the beginning of the show, the middle of the show, the end of the show, what are you shaking your head?
Anyway, go ahead.
I'll sell out that time cheap. It eats into the time I actually have to make live content. And you get, you know, whatever you want plugged, I'll mention it. Do that. Pay me. Pay that man his money. All right. We can go out on that horrible Teddy KGB impression. Later.